Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 48 of season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Apollo 1, 2, 3, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Dave Anderson of the Free Kittens Movie Guide. Welcome back once again.
Happy to be back. This is one of my favorite minutes from the movie.
Ooh, there we go. We've hit your stride. All right, so minute 48 begins with Blue responding and ends with Frank getting quite upset. So we ended things yesterday with Garber being given the task of relaying the message to Blue that they're going to pay the ransom. And so he goes, Blue responds and says, "This is Palom 123. I read you." And again, he has this strange look on his face when this is happening. Did you notice what I'm talking about?
Elaborate.
It's hard to really read his face here. You know, we talked yesterday about the fact that he is amused and enjoying every aspect of everything that he needs to do here. But he's got a very solemn look here on his face, trying to figure out what, you know, he's trying to be one step ahead of everyone else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at this point, he must be thinking to himself, okay, why are they calling me now? Are they going to be asking for more time? Do they have some sort of reason for it or anything like that? And, you know, I mean, even going all the way back to the fact that, you know, he complained to Mr. Green that they were 5 minutes overdue on time. You know, he has this thing planned out so meticulously. And, you know, and he's ruthless about that fact also. Because, mm-hmm. you know, things need to be done a certain way. He's just sitting there with his crossword puzzle book and, you know, responds on the radio for the whole thing. And at this point, he hears Garber say, "We agree to pay the ransom. Repeat, we agree to pay." And I love Frank. I think Frank is a great character here.
He's, you know, hilarious.
He just in the back and goes, "What? They're going to do what?
They're going to do what?"
And then Garber tries to, like, shush him a little bit. And he goes, "Do you read me, Palom 123? And he goes, "Zach, you're out of your skull." He turns to him and goes, "Hey, will ya?" You know, like, stop bothering me. I'm trying to take care of something here. You know, you're just getting in the way. And then Blue responds and goes, "I read you, Garber." And then he goes, "All right, take down my next set of instructions. They're to be followed to the letter. The money is to be paid in the following denominations: 500,000 in 50s, 500,000 in 100s. All right." And at this point, you know, as he's talking, we see Garber trying to, like, find a pen. And eventually someone just gives him a pencil, and he takes that and writes it all down. And he writes down, okay, 500,000 in 50s, 500,000 in 100s, right. Then Blue continues and goes, "Which will be put in stacks of 200 bills each, bound with two thick elastic bands." And then Garber looks and goes, two stacks of bills bound in what? Bound with thick elastic bands. And he goes, point two, all of the bills will be old bills. Their serial numbers to be random. Now that's all. When the delivery arrives, we'll contact you with further instructions. All right? And so, once again, Blue is showing how this whole thing was completely planned out so well. And he's, you know, he knows what he wants. He knows exactly, you know, how he wants everything bound and stuff like that. So, you know, he mentions elastic bands. You know what an elastic band is, right?
Yeah, of course.
It's a rubber band.
Yeah.
Okay, do you know any other?
Got plenty of those laying around the house.
No, as do we all. Do you know any other names for a rubber band or an elastic band?
Not on this side of the pond, but maybe they're called elastic bands where he comes from.
Right, well, that they are. But they're also sometimes known as gum band or a lackey band. Which is
Yeah, did not know
they're
that either.
interesting terms to use for that. I don't really I don't understand the nicknames, I guess you could say, for the rubber band. Do you know when the rubber band was patented?
I have no idea.
So
Or where.
it was patented actually on March 17th, 1845. And isn't that pink? St. Paddy's Day?
It is. It is.
Yeah,
Well,
so I mean,
something else I can celebrate that day.
there you go. That's right. You can be shooting rubber bands at people as you're drinking your beer. So I mean, again, they've been around for 180 years. That's still pretty amazing. They actually started changing the way things were in the 1920s when people would take tires. There were companies that would take tires and they would cut the band by hand in order to use those as rubber bands also. Then they changed it again, and in the 50s they had a new patent of how to the method of making elastic bands, which was when they started making them in the open ring design that we're all familiar with these days. Now, do you know they have let's talk about some of the records that you can make like a rubber band ball.
I've tried that before. I got it to about the size of a softball.
Do you know what the largest rubber band ball is? Like how big do you think it is, or how much does it weigh, or something like that?
I think
According to Guinness, obviously.
I want to say it's, isn't it like a circumference of like 12 feet or something like that. I know it's huge.
It is 20.68 feet circumference.
Someone's got a lot of spare time on their hands.
Yeah, definitely. It was it's 9,000 pounds. It weighs 9,000 pounds, which is 4,000 kilograms. Height, it's 6 feet 7 inches tall. And therefore, it has a circumference of 20.68 feet. And just give a round give a round number for a guess. Yes, how many rubber bands do you think it uses?
I'm going to take a guess and say 2 million.
No, it's a little more than 700,000 rubber
God.
So again, this is all pretty amazing, the sizes. So originally the world record was set in 1998, and then it was beat in 2006, and then it has so far stood since 2008.
Oh, so there's multiple people trying for this record.
Apparently, yeah. Now the one that I mentioned, the latest one that holds the world record right now. So I said it was more than 700,000. So it is approximately 726,500 rubber
That's a
bands.
lot of rubber bands.
But what's really interesting is the one that had the record right before them only had 175,000 rubber bands. So they must have been larger rubber
Oh, sure, yeah.
bands. Because that one even had 19 feet circumference, so that's really weird. But like you said, it's people have a lot of spare time on their hands. What can you say about that? So, what did you want to say about our good friend Frank?
He's just, he's played by Dick O'Neill, who was always a great character actor. He's one of those people where you say, "Oh, it's that guy," but you never know his name. He's been kicking around since the 50s, did a lot of television. And he just plays this character so well. Even though Garber has nothing to do in the decision making, he singles out Garber as the reason they're giving in, which means he talks without thinking first. And the fact that he displays no sympathy for the passengers is kind of an on, a running gag that makes him sort of endearing, even though he's probably not well liked by most of his coworkers. It just
I
seemed
wouldn't
like
agree. I
another.
wouldn't go that far. I would think that people do like him because you see that everyone's around beforehand. Everyone was standing around, Frank, as if they were looking up to him. That he's the one who's dealing with this situation. I don't know if you would say that people don't like him, but he's very gruff. Maybe the train conductors, don't like him because of the way he acts. But I think the people in the office, actually can relate to him better. Again, that's my impression.
Or maybe they're intimidated by him at least. I don't know. But yeah, he's such a fun character. And what's cool about him is, in relation to the story, he's kind of superfluous. He doesn't really contribute anything to the plot, but it's nice to have him there
Right.
for color, for and that's what's cool about him. Yeah, I was looking up Dick O'Neill and
It's hard to say.
he
Once again, let me just interrupt you for a second there. It's hard to say that he doesn't contribute to the plot because he actually does, because he's giving us a dissenting voice.
Yeah.
Everyone else is, again, we talked yesterday about the fact that the borough commander, I think his name's Harry, said that his men were looking forward to going in, to rushing the train. So here we're getting another dissenting voice. We're hearing from somebody saying, look, you guys are crazy that you're doing this. You shouldn't be doing this.
Well, he's a dissenting voice, but Garber pretty much keeps blowing him off and telling him to keep, shut up or whatever, and until later, of
He doesn't
course.
give him the shut up. He says, shut up.
Shut
Shut
up. Yeah.
up.
Okay. I didn't want to butcher my attempt at a New York accent. But yeah, Dick O'Neill passed away about 27 years ago, and he was only 70. And I would have thought he would have been much older because he almost looks like he's 70 years old in the movie. Yeah, he's a neat character. I like old Frank.
I
And
do too.
one thing I really like about this particular minute is the exchange between Garber and Blue is just seamlessly edited, switching back and forth between the control room and the train, sometimes mid-sentence without skipping a beat, almost as if the conversation could be taking place with these characters in the same room. And considering neither Matthau and Shaw, they don't even share a scene until the end. They do feel like they're engaging each other, and that's largely due to the performances and the editing. It's a really well edited scene considering there's no action, but it's urgent. I like the urgency of that scene. And like you said before, another example of Mr. Blue's meticulousness.
Again, he's thought of everything except for Garber. That's what it came down to.
Yeah.
Right. So I mean, one of the things that Blue was saying, he says, when the delivery arrives, we'll contact you with further instruction. All right. And at this point, Garber goes, about what? Your getaway? And then Blue, once again, he gives a little bit of a smirk, believing the, I guess, the wise ass aspect of of Garber. And he goes, signing off now. And then Frank gets his last word and he goes, son of a bitch, must be crazy. Yeah, he's very colorful with everything that he has to say here. And then
For
Frank
sure.
just gets up off the console and storms away. Not very happy that this is the situation. You can't blame him. Trying to run a
No, not
goddamn
really.
railroad. That's
Still has a job to do.
right. And you give him credit for that too. He realizes that everything is at a standstill because of the train. But let's find a way to let all the other trains work. And then when he realizes that there isn't anything you can do to get the other trains to start moving, say, okay, you got to deal with this one.
Yeah.
Sorry, I like the way they do it fits in really well with the system. Now, what's really cool is if you look in the background right at the end of this minute, you see a board with information about the trains and stuff like that, and you see that the one that's right behind them says the Pelham line, and it has like all the stops, stuff like that. So I just think it's the detail that they use here is also great, because I don't know if something like this is what do you think this would have been filmed in the real control center, or they would or command center, or they just rebuilt one. I don't know the answer.
I would imagine that the New York transit system would not want people to see this control room, if for no other reason than they don't want anyone to aspire to try the same thing. I'm guessing. I don't know.
Right. Okay.
I could be wrong. I mean, the setting feels authentic. It's obviously shot in New York, so on location. So maybe they did give him permission. I'm gonna have to look that up because now I'm curious.
Right. I mean, one of the things that's one of the my favorite trivia pieces about this movie is that ever since this movie came out, there has never been a Pelham 123. They purposely don't release the Pelham line, the number 6 train line, at 1:23 a.m. or p.m. because it's like a superstition about this movie.
Interesting. Hell, if I were in New York, I'd write it just to say I wrote on Pelham 123.
That's right. That's right. Instead you would say, "Oh, I wrote on Pelham 124." Is
Have the same ring.
the sequel? No, it is definitely not the same ring. But if that's what you got, that's what you got. You don't have a choice. It's not something that we get to choose. But I just think it's really funny that here you have a movie that came out 51 years ago, and ever since the real train that is depicted here is not used at all because of that, or that the they don't use that particular train line out of superstition that someone's going to hijack it. But again, they're only asking for $1 million, so nowadays that would be a Trump change.
Yeah, I'd still take it.
Yeah, but then you got to split it four ways at least. That's probably.
That's true.
Yeah, so you're not getting $1 million. You're getting 25. You're getting a quarter of a million. So again, that's fine too.
Yeah, I might be able to pay off my house, but that's about it.
Well, that's a start. You got to start somewhere, don't you?
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else you wanted to discuss about this particular minute?
No, just talked about the editing and Frank. Those are the two things I wanted to mention, so I think we covered that.
Okay, excellent. Every Wednesday we have a segment called Hijack Hump Day, where my guests will give their top 5 movies about some form of hijacking. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, now number five is Speed. I know it's often referred to as Die Hard on a Bus, but it actually got its inspiration from another film that's on my list. But it's still a really fun film, and it was my first indication that Keanu Reeves could be a convincing action hero, where he didn't come across as sounding like Ted Theodore Logan.
I was gonna say
Supremely.
you didn't get that from Bill and Ted that he could have been in action.
Not quite. One of the he's you know he's the same re he's the main reason that he's the main thing that dragged Dracula down to me too. So number four is Airport 77. I'm a sucker for disaster movies, so you guys will have to forgive me if I give this a little more praise than it probably deserves. But it does feature a pretty elaborate, intricate hijacking at the beginning of the film that goes horribly wrong. When the plane hits an oil derrick and sinks into the Atlantic. The movie's definitely a product of the 70s, and it's not without its, issues and silly dialogue. But it's one of those personal guilty pleasures.
Okay,
Number three is...
it's actually my favorite of the airport movies.
Oh, mine too.
I know Jim O'Kane will say that that it is obviously airport, the original airport is the best. But for me, when you're dealing just with the four disaster movies, not Airplane, which is still better than all of the others put together.
No argument here.
I remember even seeing it as a kid. And the idea of, this plane being stuck, underwater in the Bermuda Triangle area and, trying to find a way to get the passengers out safely and stuff like that. So, I've always enjoyed it.
And I love the crash sequence. And Jack Lemmon, bless his heart,
Yep.
still gives his all.
Hey, anything for a paycheck, right?
Number three is Captain Phillips, directed by Paul Greengrass, who really does a good job depicting visceral action in films. I think it's one of Tom Hanks's more underappreciated performances, and I've seen it not as many times as some of the other films on my list. I've watched it maybe three or four times. And it still gets me on edge. Number two is a Japanese film from 1975 called The Bullet Train. And this is where Speed drew a lot of its inspiration. This is about a crew who put a bomb on a bullet train, which will explode if it slows down. And there's an interesting approach to this movie because the antagonists are a lot more fleshed out than the protagonists. And in fact, just as much screen time is dedicated to their backstories, if not more so than the people we're supposed to be rooting for. It's a really long movie, and it's got its histrionic moments, but it's an entertaining movie. And anyone who watches this, you can see the definite similarities between this and Speed.
Interesting. I've never seen that one, so.
And I bought it on Blu-ray, and I believe it's on Tubi, but in an edited version because there were a couple of versions. This is a very long original cut, and then there was one that was edited down for release elsewhere. But I don't remember how long it is. But someone told me in another podcast that it was available on Tubi. And number one is United 93, also directed by Paul Greengrass. This remains a tough movie to watch, and I think it would be for anybody who remembers that day. But it can't be dismissed because it's brilliantly made, depicting the events of that day in pretty much real time, in an almost guerrilla style filmmaking, using some of the people who are actually involved behind the scenes in the control rooms. It's to me, it's on that short list of movies like Schindler's List and The Plague Dogs and 12 Years a Slave as amazing movies that are an endurance test simply because of the subject matter.
Okay, I actually just rewatched it the other day. Just letting people be behind the curtain a little bit. So we are just a few days after September 11th. So I actually I try to watch it at least once a year. It as you said, and I agree, it's a difficult watch, but I think I've seen it. What have I seen it, 8 times or maybe more even? I you know what? I don't even remember at this point how many times I've seen it. It's because to me it's just such a powerful movie.
Very powerful, yeah.
And
And
every time I watch
does
it,
he?
it just gets me again.
Yeah,
I don't want, I don't mind
simply
watching a
sim
movie that'll get me. Sorry, I've seen it 12 times. There you go. Watching it
it...
the other day was my 12th time watching the movie.
Yeah, for a movie with, it doesn't go into a lot of character background. There are no melodramatic flourishes. It just seems so raw and, really strikes a nerve.
Yeah, there's actually even a documentary on YouTube that you can watch called United 93, The Families in the Film, which I actually watched for the first time right now, just the other day. And it shows the actors meeting the families of their counterparts. And
Oh, I've seen that.
how the families reacted and how the actors reacted, and then they actually got to see a premiere showing of the movie before it came out in 2006, and they also then got the initial gut reaction of the family members for having seen it. Because Paul Greengrass is known for being as many as attentive to detail as possible, that he went and contacted every single one of the 40 families to get permission to depict their family members, and he created a connection with all of them also. I had him on my show 2 seasons ago, and I hope next season to have him back. Corey Johnson, who is an actor who was in Saving Private Ryan, so he talked about that, and then he was also in United 93, and he was also in Captain Phillips. And for United 93, he talked about the fact that it's a movie that he does not do interviews about. He refuses to do interviews about it because it's so personal, but he also believes that it's his best work, because of the everything that's depicted there. So yeah. Right. So that's a great list. Thank you very much for that. So once again, we will play the daily game of Name That Remake. So let's spin the wheel and see what remake you're gonna get, and let's see if it's something you can even guess just by the years again.
Let's see if I can keep my streak alive.
You
What, I'm 2-0?
are 2-0 so
Yeah.
far. Original movie came out in 1951, and the remake came out in
51?
51. The remake came out in 2008. It's about an alien landing on Earth and telling the people of Earth that they have
The day the earth stood still.
to. There you go.
In an earlier, the last segment, we talked about how most remakes are inferior to the originals. And I know this may sound like blasphemy, but I did enjoy the remake as much as the original film in this one. Mainly because they made a lot of changes, and it wasn't exactly the same story. So I felt like I was watching a different story than the original film.
Okay, that's fair. I'm not the biggest fan of the remake of this one, but I can understand what you're saying, because again, between 1951 and 2008, the ideas of technology and the special effects help make something like that I guess more palatable to watch and take in. So that makes sense. All right, great. So would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
All my feline friends at freekittensmovieguide.com, where we highlight the latest physical media releases for those of you who still do that. And we also feature quite a few essays of classic and not so classic films.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, catch you.
Kazoon, hey.